Baltimore DMV. You know who it is, Youngest in Charge Movement. Linnell Willingham here with you live and local on 106.7 The Fan and always streaming live nationally on the always free Odyssey app. Ride with me. It'll take you up to 10 o'clock here on this Thursday night edition of Overtime. A lot to get to. If you were rocking with us last night, an eventful edition of OT. In the final 5 minutes of the program, we got Washington Commanders news that sent shockwaves through the DMV. Future Hall of Famer Von Miller coming to the nation's capital to help bolster this pass rush. I am really in a spot right now where I'm super excited about what's going on. I think anybody that saw what happened last night should be excited about this as well. When you get a chance to add somebody with Von Miller's pedigree to help bolster your pass rush, you got to feel good about the situation. I'll say this. I am not going to sit here and act as if Von Miller is the end-all, be-all solution to this Commanders pass rush, but for a group that is kind of lacking household names on the edge, I feel a hell of a lot better about the group knowing that Von Miller is going to be here. A guy that's posted 129.5 career sacks, ranking 16th on the all-time sack list. Still got to pass a physical before this deal becomes official, but you got to feel good if you are a Commanders fan about adding Von Miller to this pass rush. 36 years old, a guy that honestly makes this team a little bit older. I know it was definitely a topic of discussion this past week, the age of this group. I'll say this, though. For a guy that was a situational rusher last year, and I believe he had somewhere along the lines, I think it was, 229 pass rush snaps last year for Von Miller and a registered 6 sacks. Not bad, right? Like, if he comes here to Washington and does that next year, thinking about what his role is going to be, you're not upset about it. I'll continue to say this about this pass rush group. I think it is going to be a pass rush by committee. I don't think there's going to be some guy that has 10, 12 sacks like we saw a year ago for Washington. Now, maybe it happens because Dante Fowler, as I always continue to say, had the quietest 10.5 sack season you'll ever see. But I think when you're talking about this pass rush unit next year, it's going to be a lot of pass rush by committee. I think the interior group of Javon Kinlaw and Jazon Newton and Deron Payne all are going to have a part of this pass rush. All are going to be a key part of this pass rush. I said it last night. Like, I expect, and I said it last week when I was sitting in with Danny as well, I don't know if we'll see a guy register double-digit sacks. Now, maybe we do, but I think it's going to be 6 to 8 sacks for a guy here, 6 to 8 sacks for a guy there. This is a pass rush unit last year that only had one guy registered double-digit sacks, and that was Dante Fowler. But as a whole, they were 11th in the National Football League in sacks. The big issue with the pass rush unit is getting more of a pass rush sending four. And I think that is where Von Miller can help you out at. You get the opportunity to be more versatile, to be more multiple. When you think about what the best pass rush was last year for Washington, to me, it was when Dorrance Armstrong was kicked into the interior rushing with Deron Payne or Jazon Newton, pick your defensive tackle. So think about this. On third down, you're not going to have the prospect of having Luvu and Von Miller on the edge with Dorrance Armstrong rushing from the interior. And we saw the success he was able to have doing that in the postseason. So I really feel like it's a good move for Washington. As we get into the 7 o'clock hour, we'll get into the weeds of this thing and what exactly it means and how he could benefit other guys on this team. But I'm overall excited about it. I gave you my thoughts last night. I think, and this is going to be me sounding like a bad boy, I guess, right? Because everybody's on the Von Miller train. I will say this. In terms of the situational edge rushers that you could have brought in terms of the part-time rushers that you passed on this offseason, you could have did a little better than Von Miller. But that's just me. That is just me. I'm not saying I don't like the move. I'm just saying, being greedy as a fan, as a sports radio host, I wanted a little bit more. But it is what it is. We got a lot more to get to, though, here on this Thursday night edition of Overtime. We'll have our pal Charles Davis, NFL analyst for CBS, as well as the NFL Network, going to join the program coming up in the 8 o'clock hour. Can't wait to get his thoughts on Von Miller joining Washington, and then the Terry McLaurin contract saga. And I know this doesn't directly impact what happened with McLaurin, but T.J. Watt signed a big-time deal today. And if you listen to Sports Talk Radio out in Pittsburgh or pals at 93.7 The Fan, they were worried about whether or not T.J. Watt was going to touch grass at the beginning of training camp here. And they got a deal done earlier this afternoon, 3 years, $123 million, $108 million fully guaranteed at signing. But the $41 million AAV is what really stands out about this deal. When you look at the non-quarterbacks in the National Football League, now T.J. Watt leads that division in terms of pay, getting $41 million annually. It's the most ever, the most in the NFL for a non-quarterback. Behind him, Ja'Marr Chase at $40 million, Myles Garrett at a little over $40 million, Danielle Hunter at $35.5 million, Max Crosby at $35.5 million, and then Justin Jefferson, Bosa, and CeeDee Lamb with $35 million, and then $34 million for Bosa and Lamb. So Watt topping a list that's a pretty good list to be on. I wonder if this has any impact on the Commanders deal. And I'm not saying directly, but I'm saying as far as the timeline of this thing, as you get closer to camp, Chargers already have their vets out there already, so we're kind of getting real and getting into this thing. When you think about deadline spurring action, I know training camp and the start of it's not really a deadline, but it's definitely a move point is what I would call it, because Terry McLaurin, as he, you know, alluded to earlier this week, wants to be out there with his teammates, wants to be on the grass participating, and I'm sure the team feels the same way. But as we've continued to talk about, this is a business. And as I reiterated last night, I think a lot of things can happen still when it comes to Terry McLaurin. I don't feel 100% confident that a deal is going to get done and that there's going to be some happy ending for all parties involved. I still think this thing has the potential to get nasty. I hope that it doesn't. But if it does, well, I told you so. 1-800-636-1067 is the number. We'll take a quick timeout when we come back. We talked about it briefly last night. The ESPYs, absolutely hilarious. Shane Gillis, in his opening monologue, had people cackling all night long. We played the Carl Anthony Towns joke. We'll play the best of Shane Gillis from the ESPYs last night. Plus, we'll get into a major threat coming from the House Oversight Committee when it comes to RFK 2.0. Mark Seagraves of NBC Washington joined B. Mitch and Finley earlier today. We'll let you hear from him as well. All that and more coming up next here on The Fan. Just getting rolling here on this Thursday night edition of Overtime. You're tapped in to the youngest in charge, Lino Willingham. We'll take you up to 10 o'clock. Programming note, as I said at the start of the show, I'll repeat it, because when you have big-time guests, you got to pump it hard. Charles Davis, NFL analyst for the NFL on CBS, as well as the NFL Network, going to join us in the 8 o'clock hour. We get his thoughts on what's on his mind as we get geared up for NFL training camp. As I mentioned right off the top, the Chargers already having their veterans report. Justin Herbert, saw a video of him floating around online earlier today, throwing touchdown passes. They're an interesting team to me going into next year, talking about the Chargers. I love them going out and drafting Omarion Hampton. I think he fits exactly what they're trying to do offensively. I loved that they were able to bring Khalil Mack back. Mike Williams retired earlier today. If you all knew the former Chargers receivers, he was originally drafted by the Chargers and spent some time with the Jets, spent some time with the Steelers, but then re-signed with the L.A. Chargers this offseason. And veterans had to report, I believe, over the weekend for the Chargers. So a couple of days into camp, and Mike Williams realized, nah, bro, this is not for me. So well wishes to him. Speaking of veterans reporting for camp, that happens next week for the Washington Commanders, Tuesday the 22nd. Rookie's going to report tomorrow, and that's a good sign. And I was a little bit worried about that because Trey Amos hadn't signed his second-round rookie deal yet. There was a whole big conundrum going on around the National Football League because the Texans gave their second-round wide receiver, Jaden Higgins, a fully guaranteed second-round rookie deal. It kind of changed the precedent around the NFL, and some franchises were a little bit hesitant. But now everybody playing nice. As most second-round picks across the NFL putting pen to paper. We talked about it briefly last night. I want to get into it here right now because the ESPYs was something for me growing up that I love watching. never like watching it to see my local teams get honored as the Commanders and the Wizards and the other teams here locally were never worth a damn to get mentioned on the ESPYs. But I liked it for the host, and they always get a funny celebrity to crack jokes, and the opening monologue of the ESPYs is always must-see TV. Shane Gillis was the host last night, famous comedian. He's in a bunch of different movies. This was one of the better opening monologues, not because it was, you know, having the crowd belly laughing. It was just, it was savage. And we're going to play you some of these clips from Shane Gillis last night. I do want to warn you that some of these jokes are a little bit edgy, but it's Shane Gillis poking fun at some of the biggest storylines in the world of professional sports. One of which we talked about last night, Karl Anthony Towns of the New York Knicks, has been really, he's a polarizing guy, I guess is the best way that I would describe him. One of the things that he's known for, besides getting buckets as a big, is his voice inflection consistently changing. I know there was a lot of scuttlebutt out there with certain media members challenging his masculinity and things of that nature. It's crazy because if you've seen Karl Anthony Towns' wife, Jordan Woods, she's beautiful. So to question his masculinity is crazy, but it's kind of what the internet has turned into for Karl Anthony Towns. Gilbert Arenas, the former Wizard, made it famous on his podcast saying that Cat was built like a female because he has a short torso and long legs. Well, here's what Shane Gillis had to say last night as he was introducing the New York Knicks.
The New York Knicks had a great season. Yeah, hell yeah. Karl Anthony Towns is here. Hey, girl.
I could not believe that he had the kahunas to say something like that on national television about another grown-ass man. I couldn't believe it. Now, I haven't seen Karl Anthony Towns react on social media. I do know that social media was in absolute frenzy last night with some of the stuff that Shane Gillis had coming out of his mouth. Those of you that are familiar with the Deshaun Watson situation, convicted and civilly convicted of having some very inappropriate behavior during massage parlor sessions, here's what Shane Gillis had to say about Deshaun Watson.
I didn't write this. Put your hands where my eyes can see is what they say when Deshaun Watson gets a massage. I disagree as well. I swear to God, I didn't want to tell it.
The reaction of the crowd, honestly, is what was so funny to me. And then him reading the proper saying, look, like, I didn't write these jokes. They're kind of just up here knowing that he's the one that wrote these jokes. I give him credit for walking the tightrope, so to speak, when it comes to that. The ESPYs last night was actually on ABC, and I have to double check on this, but I don't think it's something that normally happens. They had Summer League on ESPN last night, so they put it on ABC, which is obviously, you know, ESPN Disney affiliate. So maybe because it was on ABC, he was able to walk the tightrope with some of the jokes that he told. I promise this is the last one that we'll play, because this is honestly super duper savage. Here is Shane Gillis on Caitlin Clark and Shedeur Sanders.
Shedeur Sanders had his jersey number retired at Colorado this year, and people are saying it's because of nepotism, because of his father, and it's not. It's because he went 13-12 over his career, and he almost won the Alamo Bowl. Definitely not nepotism, right? All right. It's a big year for the WNBA. I love Caitlin Clark. Kate, yeah, hell yeah. Caitlin Clark, she and I have a lot in common. We're both whites from the Midwest who have nailed a bunch of threes. Yeah. There you go. Lighten up a little. This is not serious. We'll see about this one. When Caitlin Clark retires from the WNBA, she's going to work at a Waffle House so she can continue doing what she loves most. Fist-fighting black women.
Oh, my goodness. Shout out to Shane Gillis, man. There's one more that I was been debating on all day long whether I was going to play it or not. I'm going to choose to hold off because I like my job. But that's just an inside peek as to what you got last night from Shane Gillis at the ESPYs, doing a hell of a job We'll get to some local flavor a little bit later on. We had a couple of local athletes walk away with some hardware last night at the ESPYs. What I want to get to right now, though, is honestly something that I wish came out last night, because we had plenty of good conversation here last night on The Fan about RFK 2.0 and whether or not you all were on board with the Commanders potentially flirting with Maryland or Virginia now that they're able to negotiate with other jurisdictions. But this came out earlier today from our guy Eric Flack of WSA9. Flack joined us last night to kick off the show. The chair of the House Oversight Committee, James Comer, seemingly threatening a congressional investigation if the D.C. Council does not pass the RFK deal before the August recess. There's a lot to get to with that. Basically, in a nutshell, what happened earlier today is there was a letter addressed to Phil Mendelson of the chairman Mendelson of the D.C. City Council, basically saying, get your act together, D.C. City Council. Why is this vote taking so long? Why are we now talking about delaying the start date? And I want to read some of this excerpt for you, because I was honestly stunned by what I read. And it honestly shows you just how serious the federal government is about RFK 2.0 happening. The letter starts like this. The Committee on Oversight and Government Reform is writing regarding the District of Columbia's implementation of the RFK Memorial Stadium Campus Revitalization Act and the urgency of completing all necessary legislative action on the proposed stadium redevelopment by August of 2025. Basically saying, I know we had July 15th as this like soft deadline. The federal government saying if it's not done by August, if it's not voted on by August of 2025, then they're going to get involved and the hammer is going to be laid down. August 4th is the exact date. But I think the fact that the House Oversight Committee is getting involved on this, we all must love the House Oversight Committee, actually, as fans, right? Think about why Daniel Snyder was pressured to sell the then Redskins, right? Because of the House Oversight Committee putting tons of pressure on him, on the National Football League, to get him out of office, basically. But I think with this, as I've alluded to with the RFK 2.0 stuff, I continue to draw my line in the sand. I don't really care where the new stadium goes. I just want it to open in the year 2030. I want to have the shiny new toy. I want to be able to, you know, host Super Bowls and Final Fours and college football playoffs, WrestleMania, the whole nine. The longer this thing drags out, the longer it takes for us to get those cool events here in the DMV. So I don't really care where it goes. I'm okay with RFK 2.0 because of the financial benefits that it has for the residents of D.C. But outside of that, man, it's more nostalgia for you all, not somebody like me. But as I continue to say every time I talk about this, there are enough people in power that want this to happen to where it's probably going to end up happening. And if today's letter from the House Oversight Committee is any sort of any sort of indicator as to where things are going, it's a matter of when and not if the Commanders are getting back to the District of Columbia. 1-800-636-1067 is the number. 1-800-636-1067 is the number. We'll take a quick timeout. When we get back, we'll let you hear from Mark Seagraves of NBC4. He joined B. Mitch and Finley earlier this afternoon. Plus, we'll get into the big news that broke during the final moments of my show last night. Von Miller coming to the nation's capital, the first ballot Hall of Famer, going to help this Commander's pass rush, hopefully, in 2025. What impact can he have on others in the burgundy and gold while coming here to D.C.? That's next here on The Fan. Still rocking and rolling here on this Thursday night edition of Overtime. You're tapped in to the youngest in Charles and L. Willingham. We'll take you up to 10 o'clock. A lot more to get to, including Mark Seagraves of NBC4 joining B. Mitch and Finley earlier today, giving his thoughts on where things currently stand when it comes to RFK 2.0, the House Oversight Committee sending out the threat of all threats earlier this afternoon with the letter that they wrote to Phil Mendelson of the D.C. City Council. If you're just now joining us, man, look, I think it's very clear how things are going and what all signs are pointing to. All signs are pointing to this thing getting done and voted on next month, August the 4th is when the next vote is slated to happen. If it isn't approved then, and that's very much on the table, by the way, right? If it isn't approved by then those threats, it won't just be letters at that point. It'll be Donald Trump, Congress, and the federal government stepping in and taking over in terms of trying to get the Commanders back to RFK. And I think it's something where, as I said last night, and I think a lot of others have alluded to this too, the draft doesn't get awarded to D.C. if there wasn't an overwhelming consensus that, hey, they're going to be able to build a stadium in the nation's capital, right? The NFL wouldn't have thrown D.C. that bone, wouldn't have thrown the Commanders that bone if that wasn't the case. So I think what today kind of confirms is that the federal government isn't playing around with the D.C. City Council, who continues to drag their feet, who continues to not make this a priority. And quite frankly, a lot of people have noticed, including folks in the federal government. So I'm not surprised that we've gotten to this point. I'm disappointed because I thought that, you know, you would hope that the D.C. City Council would have the residents of D.C. have their best interest. And it honestly, the way they're dragging their feet doesn't seem like they do. So we'll see what ultimately happens here. I want to give you some professional insight on where we currently stand when it comes to RFK 2.0. Chief investigative reporter for NBC4, Mark Seagraves, joined B. Mitch and Finley earlier today and had this to say on the future of RFK.
So the good news is that on Monday, the D.C. Council took action and voted to approve the funding, to set aside the money, the more than $1 billion, half a billion dollars in cash for the foundation and infrastructure, the money for the garages and some other buildings on the property. That was all given preliminary approval on Monday by the D.C. Council. So that's a positive step forward. That's great news for those who are supporting the stadium deal. The bad news is we still don't know when the council is going to take the vote on the overall legislation. I do know that sources have told me that the Commanders' leadership is meeting with, or has met this morning with, Chairman Mendelsohn about this deadline. Everybody's very concerned that the deadline that was set in the term sheet was July 15th, which was 2 days ago. And I know there's been some reporting that Maryland and Virginia are now renewing their efforts. But, you know, we heard Governor Wes Moore of Maryland say to my friend and former colleague Brad Bell at WJLA-TV the other day that Maryland is no longer interested in pursuing the team. So I would not be worried about the July 15th deadline. That's an arbitrary date that they put in there that while it does allow for the team, if no action had been taken by the council, to start negotiating with other jurisdictions, they would have to enforce that. They would have to, you know, notify the city that they plan to enforce that clause. And they, as far as I've been told from the mayor's office, the team has not done that yet. And so I think the team is hoping to work with the council chairman to get a vote on the overall legislation as soon as possible. And that could even be as soon as July 31st.
So a lot to chew on there from Mark Seagraves, giving us the latest on where things currently stand. There was some progress, though, made earlier this week, and that's kind of what Seagraves alluded to. The money from the parking garages is something that has been a big debate and big talking point when it comes to RFK 2.0. So it seems like after hearing what Mark had to say, we have some clarity and a little bit of resolution with that. Bottom line is, I think this happens. The 2030 opening date, I still feel like could potentially be in jeopardy. It just all comes down to what happens in August, you know, when the sides reconvene again here. And, like, to me, where Mario Bowser messed up with this, and what I keep reiterating and going back to, this thing should have been voted on, should have been approved, should have been passed. How do you come to terms on a deal with a business in the Commanders without running it by the city council? I don't get that. What this really has exposed, and I don't want to get too political with it at all, but like in reality, what this has really exposed is the major disconnect that exists between Mayor Bowser and the D.C. City Council. Because if this was a responsible jurisdiction, a responsible political group, I guess is the best way that I could put it, this would have already been done. This would have already been done, especially when you consider, and I keep going back to this, especially when you consider the type of really transcendent deal that the Commanders are giving the district in terms of them being willing to foot 76% of the bill. When you look at the other stadium deals across the country, the teams, the owners, are not taking that type of financial responsibility. They're putting the onus on the taxpayers, and kudos to Josh Harris and company for not doing that so that the city, its taxpayers, the residents can actually benefit from what's coming to our nation's capital. And like I said last night, I'll continue to say it. This isn't a stadium that they're trying to build. This is a sports and entertainment Taj Mahal. And by the year 2030, hopefully we'll get to see it. 1-800-636-1067 is the number. I do want to get into Von Miller. That news broke late last night while we were here on The Fan. The future Hall of Famer coming to the nation's capital to help bolster this Commander's pass rush. Miller spent the past three seasons with the Buffalo Bills, recording 14 sacks, and he had 8 in his first season, 6 last year. Then he missed the in-between season with a torn ACL. Von Miller, though, is a guy, as I said in the opening segment, that gives you a little bit of versatility. I think where his impact is going to be felt most, clearly, right, is in these obvious passing situations. Now, as I said in the opening segment, to me, where I get most excited with is the potential of, like, I know the Giants back in the day, you know, famously coined the term that NASCAR package, that NASCAR front. But what the Commanders are going to be able to unleash on third down and obvious passing situations next year is going to be scary, because I'm thinking you're going to put your four best pass rushers on the field. That's Frankie Louvu. That's Von Miller. That's Daron Payne and Torrence Armstrong. Or it may be Jazon Newton and Torrence Armstrong. Or Javon Kinlaw and Torrence Armstrong. I'm honestly more curious about what happens on the interior than I am on the edge. But adding Von Miller to the equation obviously spices things up. The one area where I think he could help them out as well is when it comes to these four-man rushes. And I talked about it in the opening segment. The Commanders had 43 sacks last year, good for 11th best in the National Football League. But when it came to their four-man rush, only rushing four guys, they ranked 26th in the National Football League with 22 sacks. And in the fourth quarter, the Commanders were 30th with 5 sacks. Those numbers coming from a guy, John Keim of ESPN. Look, I mean, the numbers are what the numbers are, right? Like, you can say what you want about your confidence level in the pass rush, but the proof is in the pudding. I think there is a good reason why this team wanted to add a guy like Von Miller. They felt like they needed some more pass rush juice. Now, I'll say this, the timing of it is a little bit surprising to me, and here's why. Not mad at it, just surprising. I thought based off of the way the team moved this offseason that they were clearly comfortable with what they had in-house at the edge rusher spot. You saw them bypass it several different times throughout the draft. We saw them bypass it throughout free agency. So I thought, okay, look, you go into training camp, you let guys like Dietrich Wise and Dorrance Armstrong and Frankie Louvu and Javonte Jean-Baptiste, let them bump, let them compete, and then assess during the middle of camp whether or not you're satisfied enough with your pass rush juice. And because you have two joint practice opportunities with New England and with Baltimore, you'll get to see your pass rush in action and see whether or not they're going to be able to get home. Now, I know training camp's kind of tough to gauge it because you can't touch the quarterback, but pressures you're going to have in camp. Now, the Commanders did look at other defensive ends during the offseason. Sources say that they reached out to DeMarcus Lawrence, as you should expect when you consider where Dan Quinn comes from. Lawrence has been, you know, the staple of the Cowboys' pass rush over the past 5 years. So they did reach out to him. They reached out to Joey Bosa, two guys that actually have major injury concerns, but I didn't really have too many qualms about that because when you look at the way that this team treated their veterans last year and the way that the injury bug kind of missed this group, you feel good about what the training staff here in D.C. is doing to get guys prepared to play. I wonder how much that played into Von Miller actually coming here. Because that's the other thing that I get excited about. Think about the veterans that came here last year. Zach Ertz, Austin Eckler, Bobby Wagner. All guys that play well. All guys that didn't have to worry about injuries outside of Austin Eckler. Now, his injury was a concussion. There's really no preventative measure that would stop this. There's really no preventative measure, rather, that can stop a concussion. That's what I'm trying to say. So when it comes to that, like, it feels like to me when it comes to this Commanders pass rush and what it's going to look like next year, as I said off the top, I don't think there's going to be one guy that dominates the unit. I don't think we're going to have that double I don't really want to say double digit. I think we'll get a guy that eclipses 10, right? Frankie Louvu was on the cusp of it last year. So we'll get one double-digit guy, but I don't think we'll see what we saw last year when two guys really dominated the sack totals. I think other guys will get in on it. The other metric you got to look at as well is pressures. And that's an area last year – that's an area where last year Washington was pretty good at as well. So I think adding Von Miller makes me a little bit more easy about the pass rush, but I also don't think it's a unit that I still have 100% confidence in. Right? I'm still raising my eyebrows potentially at what they could have as a pass rush unit. Now, adding Von Miller and some of the other bodies make you a little more multiple, but at the end of the day, you got to go out and prove it. The bottom line is when this pass rush needed to get after the quarterback in the NFC Championship game against Jalen Hurts, they couldn't. And when you're talking about how this group stacks up, you're not talking about how they stack up against the Commanders' offensive line, which is actually pretty damn good. You're talking about how they stack up against the Philadelphia Eagles, the group that everybody in the National Football League right now is chasing. 1-800-636-1067 is the number. You can tweet at me as well. It is at N-E-L-L underscore BTP. My guy Buckeyes and Commanders tweets at me and says, "Hey, Linnell, I'm listening on the Odyssey app right now. Just wanted you to know that I love overtime. The intro music gets me every time. I'm glad that you're here, my friend." We got a lot more to get to, including NFL on CBS analyst Charles Davis going to join us coming up at 8:15. We'll get his thoughts on what is next for the Washington Commanders and what's on his mind ahead of NFL training camp opening up for most teams across the NFL next week. When we get back, though, I want to continue to discuss this Von Miller stuff. I was excited when he was brought here last night, but it's not just about the pass rush for Von Miller. It's what he could do for others. I'll expound upon that next. This is The Fan. one 800 636 1067 is the number. You can tweet at me as well. It is at N-E-L-L underscore BTP. It's a Thursday night edition of Overtime. We'll take you up to 10 o'clock. A lot more to get to, including Charles Davis of the NFL Network coming up at 8:15. We'll get his thoughts on the NFL offseason and what he is thinking as we're about a week out from most teams reporting to training camp next week. I'm super excited about it. I'll be out there. Boots on the ground each and every day, bringing you coverage of Washington Commanders training camps. I'm super excited to get the opportunity to do that. Going to be a star-studded training camp, man. Think about this. You're going to have a training camp that features Deebo Samuel, Jayden Daniels, Bobby Wagner, right? Von Miller. This is a star-studded group all of a sudden. Marshawn Lattimore. I saw a tweet last night that said, man, looking at Lattimore, Wagner, and Von Miller on this Commanders defense, and this is 2020, I mean, this would be a group that would put a lot of fear in people. There are folks out there that have made interesting sidebar comments, I guess is how I'll put it, about Von Miller being signed here, mainly Philadelphia Eagle fans, right? I've seen all the memes saying the Commanders are trying to build a retirement home. They're the oldest team in the NFL. I get that. But let's make no mistake about why Washington has a lot of older players here. This is a function of Riverboat Ron Rivera and the Marty Party not being able to draft guys. This team is in straight up win now mode, because Jaden Daniels came out last year like gangbusters and proved right off the rip that he is a top five guy in this league. And I say it all the time, the Commanders have what I consider to be the best, biggest asset in all of pro sports, a elite quarterback on a rookie contract. So now what Washington gets the ability to do, now what Adam Peters and company get the ability to do, is go be aggressive in terms of filling the holes on this roster. They clearly feel like the pass rush needed some more pop, so insert Von Miller. To me, I don't want this to be like, this is a one-off is the best way that I will put it. Don't expect Adam Peters and company to move like this moving forward. It's not his team-building philosophy to be old. The average age is going to come down when time passes and draft classes accumulate and guys stick or get cut. But the bottom line is, the best way to add cheap talent in the NFL is via the draft. And right now, cheap young talent, rather, is via the draft. And right now, the Commanders are having to, you know, go bargain bin shopping with some veterans, but some veterans that have pedigree, some veterans that fit what they're trying to establish here in the nation's capital. When it comes to Von Miller, right, I think he can still do the job at a pretty high damn level, and I think the numbers for him over the past several years show that. But I'm excited about the pass rush. I know what he can do on the field. I'm more so excited about what he does for some of the other guys around him. We put up several videos during this offseason of Frankie Louvu working exclusively with Ryan Kerrigan, who is now the Commanders' assistant defensive line coach, trying to improve his pass rush mechanics and things of that nature. Now he gets to learn from Von Miller on a day-to-day basis, right? And I think Von is going to have that impact for everybody in the pass rushing unit when it comes to Dorrance Armstrong, who's still a young, up-and-coming pass rusher that's still looking to find tricks of the trade. Javonte Jean-Baptiste, a guy I continue to mention. Cleveland Farrell, so on and so forth, man. Jalen Holmes, a guy that I continue to be excited about. So there is a whole lot to be optimistic about when it comes to his signing, and it's deeper than just what he can do on the field. I think he impacts others as well. Somebody else that he directly impacts and that I think he'll make better right off of the rip, Josh Connerly Jr. Think about this, young pup. You get to go up against Von Miller every day during training camp. If there's one way to get better as an offensive lineman, it's by going up against some of the elite pass rushers in the sport. And who better to show you the ropes during your first training camp than Von Miller? So I'm excited for Josh Connerly. I'm excited for Laremy Tunsil to get his feet wet, to work against a guy like Von Miller. I think it's beneficial for all parties involved, man. And I'll also say this. You can never have too many leaders on a football team. And I think he comes in here and is going to, you know, instantly command respect from the guys in that locker room, similarly to how Bobby Wagner did a season ago, man. So I know there's some folks out there that are like, oh, it's another old guy being brought in. But when you're in that Super Bowl window, like Washington is, you empty out the chamber in terms of pushing all your chips into the middle and using every resource you have possible to improve your football team. And I think right now that is what Adam Peters and company are doing. The pass rush is interesting, but we all know your pass rush can be significantly aided by your secondary. And this Commander's secondary, if we're being honest and transparent about it, has a lot of questions surrounding it, right? The linchpin of the secondary, the guy that's going to make it all go, is Marshon Lattimore. Is he healthy or not, right? I love what he said earlier this offseason, being open, honest, and transparent when speaking to the media, saying, hey, look, when I got here last year, I felt a pressure to get on the field and help my teammates, so I pushed through an injury that I probably shouldn't have pushed through. And everybody that watched him last year saw his play was significantly impacted as a result. So for him to be a man and come out and say that, I respect him for it. Like I said, I got to see him out there at mandatory minicamp. He looks good. He looks healthy. He was breaking on the football, planting and looking explosive. So the hope is that he can get back to that Pro Bowl form if he can. And you've got one half of the field locked down with him. And then you signed your second-round pick earlier this afternoon, Trey Amos. Everything's starting to shape up for you. But the one thing that I continue to say about the secondary is, in order for things to go well for them, they have to have a lot go right, if that makes sense, right? Ain't that a tongue twister? According for things for them to go well, right? According to things go well for them, they got to have a lot go right, is the best way that I can put it. Meaning, on paper, right, we just assume Lattimore, Trey Amos, Mikey in the slot, it's all peaches and cream. I think it's much deeper than that. Because I have reservations about, and when I use that word, don't think that I'm doubting Mikey Samuelsville. Don't think that I don't think he can do it. It's not that at all. I'm just going off of what I saw last year. I thought he was really good during training camp, right? But when we got to the regular season and we saw Mikey Samuelsville lined up in the slot, he struggled. I believe he played slot corner the first month of the season. During that time period, through the first couple of weeks of the season, he gave up the most touchdowns in the National Football League. So there is an acclimation period, an adjustment period, that's going to have to happen for Mikey Samuelsville because he played primarily on the outside last year, exclusively on the outside last year. It's a different world playing slot corner compared to outside corner. Do I think he could do it? Yes. Would I be stunned if he got off to a little bit of a slow start? No. I don't think that's an indictment on Mikey. I just think that's what happens when you're being, you know, tasked with learning two positions in your first years in the NFL. Cornerback is a volatile position in terms of, you know, guys having success right away coming out of college. It's a different game. It's officiated differently. It's regulated differently. The physicality of it is different. That's where I think Mikey helps you out, though. We saw it on the outside last year. He is a junkyard dog. Somebody that is not afraid to stick his face in there and be physical at the point of attack trying to play the run. That's why I'm excited about him getting kicked inside. That's what excites me the most. But when it comes to this Commander's secondary and this Commander's pass rush, they go hand in hand. But if we're looking at it as two isolated groups, what do you have more confidence in right now after Von Miller was signed, knowing the moves that have been made this offseason? What do you have more confidence in, this Commander's secondary or this Commander's pass rush? 1-800-636-1067 is the number. 1-800-636-1067. We're about a week away from training camp opening up. What do you got more confidence in, the back end of this Commander's defense or this pass rush? Your call's next. One 800-636-1067 is the number. You can tweet at me as well. It is at @NELL_BTP. You're tapped in to the Youngest and Charles and L. Willingham taking up the 10 o'clock tonight. What we're chewing on right now, in lieu of Von Miller signing with the Commanders last night, what do you have more confidence in right now? Think about when we started this offseason, what everyone's chief complaint was about this football team. The edge rusher spot. Because this was a defense that struggled to rush for and struggled to stop the run, a lot of people felt like that position needed to be upgraded. They brought in Dietrich Wise from the Patriots, a move that I continue to believe, despite what, you know, some may think, I think that move is going to pay huge dividends down the stretch of this football season. I really do believe that. They bring in Javon Kinlaw, somebody that, you know, can kick out to that defensive end spot, but realistically, probably is best on the interior. They signed Eddie Goldman to try to get bigger and more stout at the point of attack. But a lot of folks felt like after the draft, after the first couple of waves of free agency, that the edge rusher spot was still a problem for this group. And last night, the news comes in the final moment to my show that Von Miller's coming here to the nation's capital. That probably solidifies what they're going to do up front from here until the start of the regular season, barring some sort of injury. Knowing what you now know about this pass rush, knowing what we know about this secondary, if all parties can stay healthy, who do you have more confidence in right now as we're about a week out from the start of training camp? Is it this Commander's secondary or is it this Commander's pass rush? 1-800-636-1067 is the number. Let's go to Anthony in D.C. What's the chime in? What's going on, Anthony?
What's up, my man? How you doing, Lanell?
I'm good, brother. How you doing?
All right. You already know, man. Hey, before I start real quick, Lanell, I'm still waiting for you to come see me at Boss Discount Furniture and still let me get that bed. You said you was going to call me. You ain't called me.
I got you. I didn't. You're right. I didn't. I'll grab your number again.
We talk off air. Yeah, we talked off air and I gave the number. You ain't called.
I got you.
Now.
What do you got, though?
It's all good. So, man, I think that I got more confidence in the secondary, and I'll tell you why.
Okay.
I think that this Adam Peters going out and getting a guy like Will Hurst and Amos, and we got Quan, we got Mikey. I think that there's no, even if the defensive line is good, they is not going to be able to. I wouldn't compare them to the secondary. And we the boy from New England. I mean, he got Super Bowls, and both of our safeties can tackle, and that's very important. You're the last line of defense. Even if they get past the defensive line, well, not they. Even if Saquon get past the defensive line, they can make the tackle. I believe in the secondary more, even though they've done a good job bringing in key parts on the defensive line, even if it's for the short term. But I don't know, Linnell. I think that everybody is excited about the team. And this is the first time I've been excited about the defense in a long time.
You and me both, and I'm glad you feel that way.
But listen, though, Linnell, we went to the NFC Championship game last year. Everybody keep calling our defense sorry and our defense some crap. But, hey, on the days that they showed up, man, they played really well, man. The secondary and the defensive line. I'm just glad
I can hear what you're saying, Anthony, but you got to admit this. I don't think people are wrong. I think saying that the defense sucks is probably hyperbole, but we know that that's the weak link of this football team right now, and I think they knew going into this offseason, which is why they made the moves that they've made.
I understand, but you don't have to be great. You don't have to be outstanding. You just have to be average.
And I agree with that.
I think they was in the middle of the pack last year, and I think we're going to be top 10 this year, and you already know what Jaden going to do. And I'm going to let you go, Linnell. I know you got other callers.
Appreciate you as always, brother. 1-800-636-1067 is the number. A lot of good points made there. I'm going to disagree. I feel like in terms of which group that I have more confidence in, I don't even know if I disagree, because I can make the argument for both sides here. I think this Commanders defensive line is a deep unit, right? They got about 8-9 guys that are going to play each and every week. Talking about Javonte John-Baptiste, Dorrance Armstrong, Frankie Louvu, Dante Fowler, Kinlaw, Payne, Jazon Newton, Dietrich Wise, Jalen Holmes. I just rattled off 9 names, man. It's a deep group. In terms of this secondary, if an injury is to happen, and now I'm getting down to the nuts and bolts of this thing. If an injury is to happen, the D-line is the deeper group. They are. The D-line is the deeper group. Now, I will say this about the secondary. I think the key to this secondary having success is going to be how quickly Trey Amos can get acclimated to the National Football League. I think that's going to matter a ton. I thought he had a good spring. I know the coaches and the people in that building thought he had a good spring. But how quickly he acclimates to the NFL level is going to be huge. In college, a guy that was known for being handsy, that's why training camp is going to be perfect when you got officials out there on the days that they are, he'll get better. But as big of a question mark as Lattimore is talking about his health and whether or not he can regain that Pro Bowl form, I think Amos is just as much of a question mark. He hasn't done it at this level before. I get having a good spring, but when the pads are on and there are real bullets flying, you're either going to sink or swim. 1-800-636-1067 is the number. Von Miller added to hopefully bolster this Commander's pass rush. When you look at that group that was 11th in sacks last year, and you look at this secondary that, to their credit, didn't give up a bunch of big plays through the air, who do you have more confidence in terms of heading into next year? Is it this defensive line or is it this secondary? Chris is in D.C., wants to chime in. What's up, Chris?
Hey, what's up, Linnell?
Chris, are you a
long-time fan?
Is this Chris?
This is Chris. This is D. Chris. This is Big Chris
right
here.
You sound like you're scratching the scratch off right now, brother.
Oh man, hold on. Let me switch off this. Hold on. Let me take off the Bluetooth. We're in the car.
No, I got you.
Here we go. You ready?
I got you.
My fault. Here we go, Linnell. Here we go. So here's my take, real quick. I'm gonna throw it to you. So I feel like the defensive line has the most overhaul to it. I think Javon Kinlaw, I think Eddie Goldman, I think they're going to be the plugs that we didn't have. We had a small line.
It's very true.
So I think that, yeah, I think that Jonathan Allen, he's my height. He's a 6'3", 280. You know what I'm saying? He's my size. So I feel like he was too small to be stopping the run. So I do think that the line is I have the most hope for, but I think that the actual I think the D-backs are the best. I think the D-backs we have are the best right now in the NFC. I wow. really think that we have. I think
that's a bold proclamation. I hear you.
In the East, though, I'm just saying in the East, I think we're better than Quinyon Mitchell and Cooper DeJean. I think we got the pieces right now. And my last thing is about this.
Yeah.
I want to throw in one thing about this RFK thing. Mm-hmm. It's not that the DC Mira Bowser went to Seton. She was at the master, you know what I'm saying? So she's definitely a homegirl. So she definitely knows she went to RFK. But the rest of the council, they're a bunch of transplants. We got Nadu, Allen. And so that's why she actually went to Josh Harris. Because Josh and Mario were talking before the council. She knew that Phil Mendelson was going to be obstructionist because that's what he does. So this was political. But Mario Bowser knew what she was doing. She had to go straight to Josh.
So you're on board. You're on board with her. Going around the council to get this to get this.
Yeah, because our council is a bunch. Unfortunately, our council has been transplanted here. They're not, but they're not native Washingtonians. We got the majority of our council. You know, gentrification has changed the nature of our council. So in 1990, the council voted for RFK to be expanded to the Kingman Island. You know, so they were already going to be, and it was a done deal until Marion Barry got locked up by the federal government. And then that deal was thrown away. So I think that this has been like a 30 years in the making. I was 15 when that happened. I was a child, you know what I'm saying? But I saw it, what was going on with Barry. I knew that Barry's deal was already done. RFK was supposed to be done in 1991. So we wouldn't even be here. Maryland was never supposed to happen. Landover was in the
state. It's a very interesting take, and I appreciate you as always, man. 1-800-636-1067 is the number. The other thing about this secondary that I have a question mark with, and I've said this a couple of different times throughout the offseason, who is going to be the safety opposite Quan Martin? Who is going to be the safety opposite Quan Martin? And I know they brought in Will Harris, and I know a lot of people have already started fitting him for his gold jacket in Canton, but are you confident that he can come in and be as good as Jeremy Chinn was for you last year? Jeremy Chinn played 90% of your defensive snaps, and you're having to replace that. So in terms of which group I have more confidence in, think about the massive loss that this secondary went through last year in terms of losing Jeremy Chinn. I think that move, I've been overall pleased with what they've done this offseason, but losing Jeremy Chinn to me, I think is going to be the move that ends up biting him in the butt the most. 1-800-636-1067 is the number. Let's go to Lou in D.C. and we'll chime in. What's up, Lou?
That's so wrong. Jeremy Chinn be missing tackles. Don't know what a line that.
Jeremy Chinn missed tackles in the beginning of the season. Cut that out.
Stop it, man. That's the reason why they let him go, because he's irrelevant. He ain't nobody. Whatever, that's why he got cut from Carolina, looking for another team to work for. So don't make it look like we missing somebody like a top notch, man. Come on, Miguel. You better than that, man.
Lou, you're hating on Jeremy Chinn. I don't know why.
I'm just saying, I think Gabe Taylor going to do a much better job. I think he's going to come
Gabe
in
Taylor?
And just like Quan. Yeah, Quan. Gabe is going to be on the roster. I'm not making that up. I'm saying it right now. I told you from the get-go when they signed him to the training camp. So he's going to be on the roster. Believe that. My man Birkin, he working his butt off, and trust me, man, he's a ball hawk, and I think he might be better than Quan Martin. That's how I feel about
it. Lou, whatever the hell you sipping tonight, let me have.
I know. I'm just saying, I like to speak the truth.
That's a bold proclamation, but go ahead and answer the question.
But I like the. The defensive back. I mean, I know Von, with the addition of Von Miller, I think, it's a good pickup. You know, that's the guy. That's something that was missing from this team going to this training camp. So, we all been asking for somebody like a vet, like, Za'Darius Smith or Von Miller or somebody like that. But, I like the secondary, man. I'm looking forward to Trey Amos and, Jonathan Jones and, you know, to mix these guys, what they're going to do, man, because we've been missing, and I'm very confident in that defensive back is going to be legit, and we're going to get a lot of turnovers and things like that, because Jonathan Jones is the truth. He's a turnover machine.
Curious to see what type of role Jonathan Jones ultimately plays in the defense, Lou. I appreciate you as always, man. 1-800-636-1067 is the number. We'll take a quick timeout. When we come back, more of your calls. If you're on the line, stay there. Ray and Clinton, Anthony in D.C., Jaime and Manassas. We'll get to you coming up next. This is The Fan. is the number. You can tweet at me as well. It is at NELL_BTP. Tapped into the youngest in Charles and L. Willingham. I'll take you up to 10 o'clock tonight. Coming up in about 20 minutes or so, our pal Charles Davis, longtime NFL on CBS analyst. He also anchors the NFL Network's draft coverage. He's going to join the program coming up at 8:15. We'll get his thoughts on what has been a wild NFL offseason that is slowly but surely coming to an end. The Washington Commanders have their veterans report coming up on Tuesday. And as I continue to remind you all, I'll be out there providing you wall-to-wall coverage each and every day of Washington Commanders training camp. So make sure you keep it locked here on The Fan for all that. Most nights, there'll be an overtime. Afterwards, there'll be a couple of sit-in sessions for me as well. So a lot of different ways to get your training camp coverage for those of you that are looking to scratch your Commander's itch as we inch our way toward the start of the regular season. Right now, though, taking your calls at 1-800-636-1067. You can tweet at me as well at NELL_BTP. In lieu of this group adding Von Miller last night, a dude that is 16th all-time when it comes to the all-time sack list. A dude that's going to be a first-ballot Hall of Famer when he chooses to hang it up. Someone that's been a Super Bowl MVP in this league. When you think about what the Commanders have done this offseason to bolster this pass rush, now you add Von Miller to the group. How confident are you in this Commanders pass rush? And what are you more confident in? This secondary that's all of a sudden been retooled and revamped? With this retooled defensive line. 1-800-636-1067 is the number. Let's go to Brian in Greenbelt. Wants to chime in. What's up, Brian?
What up, the nail?
What's going on, Brian? How you doing, brother?
Everything A-okay. Hey, man, what about Will Hurts? You said who's playing opposite Quan Martin.
Brian, see, and Brian, you my main man, because I hear from you quite often, brother. You know I'm not drinking the Will Harris Kool-Aid like a diabetic. I don't want none of it. I can't do it.
I haven't seen it.
I don't want none of it. Look, I haven't seen – look, last year was really one of the first years in his career that he's been an every-down starter. I know this. They like the physicality he brings to the table. He'll hit. But as I told the last caller who didn't really want to listen to it, when you think about how big of an impact Jeremy Chinn played on this defense last year, replacing him is not going to be easy. I know they have several different in-house options. I think people assume it's Will Harris because he was a free agent, but it's not like they signed him to some lucrative multi-year deal. I wouldn't be surprised. This is my prediction, and I said this at the start of the offseason. I think your starting safety tandem for week one is Quan Martin and Jeremy Reeves. I think that Jeremy Reeves is going to get an opportunity. He was singled out this offseason by Joe Witt, if you listened to any of the media availability. I think he's a dude that embodies everything they want to be. He's got the smarts. He's earned his way by playing on special teams for years. I think he's ready for a role on the defense. I know he can tackle. That's what I'm worried about with that position in particular. Are you going to be a guy that doesn't duck smoke and comes in the alley and is willing to put your face mask on people? Like, that's what we need there. And I don't know if Will Harris has that.
It's looking like a committee. You know, he ended the season strong last year for the Saints. But, you know, he's been hurt, injured, you know. But Chinn missed some time as well. You know, we just, you know, it's, you know, we take it as it comes, you know, play about sure. Here, you know. But I don't really have any more to say, which is the scary part. I wish I could say, you know, I have more faith in one or the other. But, I mean, the pass rush is like, yeah. I'm confident about the veteran leadership in the secondary, and I think they're going to be stable. I think they're going to be solid, and I think the run stopping of the front seven, the front seven is going to be solid. So, you know, we made some progress in the offseason, but put it this way, the offense is going to have his work cut out for it, man. We're going to have to just pray on it, on defense.
For sure, and I kind of feel the same way, like you kind of alluded to. Yeah, they've made moves defensively. Am I overly confident in the group? No. Do I think they're going to be horrible, bottom of the league? Probably not. But I appreciate your call as always, Brian. Enjoy the rest
exactly.
of your day, man. 1-800-636-1067 is the number. A couple of numbers for you. VR guy John Keim of ESPN, he put this out last night when the signing was announced. And, by the way, just because we know we're dealing with a older veteran player here, Von Miller is a member of the Commanders pending a physical. So if he doesn't pass the physical, he won't be here. I want to make that very clear, and obviously – we'll cross that bridge when we get there. But these numbers, VR guy John Keim of ESPN last night. This Commanders pass rush recorded 43 sacks last year, 11th best in the National Football League. But there were significant holes in their pass rush. When they only decided to rush four, which the best defenses in the NFL make a living off of rushing four, Washington was 26th in the NFL with 22 sacks last year when rushing just four guys. And then in the fourth quarter, when it's time to close out football games, when it's time for big-time players to make big-time plays, the Commanders were 30th with 5 fourth-quarter sacks. When I read that number, my jaw dropped. To think that you played 17 weeks of regular season football and you only amassed 5 fourth-quarter sacks, got to be more impactful. That's why I say this all the time, right? What do I consistently say? Everyone was all geeked up about Dante Fowler being let go. It was the quietest 10.5 sack season that you'll ever see. 1-800-636-1067 is the number. We'll continue to take your calls on what you have more confidence in, the pass rush or the secondary. But when we come back, I want to begin to switch gears here a little bit as we get geared up for our pal Charles Davis, who's going to join us coming up at about 8:15. I promise that the last two nights I didn't get to it because we've been slammed with breaking news. But part three of our position preview series continues coming up next. The wide receiver spot. Terry McLaurin obviously putting this group in limbo. We obviously know him and the Commanders are at an impasse when it comes to this contract. What about the rest of the guys in this receiver room, though? We'll chew on that next. This is The Fan.